and welcome back to another episode of the Prepping for Everything podcast with me, Emily. I assume that you all know that I'm Emily by now if you're listening to this every week, but for those that are new here, I always feel the need to introduce myself. I am currently sitting in the car up at our new house. We recently bought a house that needs a lot of renovation. So the only warm place right now is the car. That's where we're recording. Rosemary, our baby, she's having a nap, so we are making the most of this half hour that we have. And as I'm recording this from the car, Will is zooming past on the lawnmower that we recently bought. We bought this secondhand lawnmower. It's quite funny the way that we found it. It was on Facebook Marketplace. We saw that a house near us was having this downsizing sale. So you sort of go along and they're getting rid of loads of things. It was an older couple. And we spotted this lawnmower. But there were so many other people around it putting offers in and putting bids in. So I thought by the time that we arrived, it was later in the day, I thought there was no way that we would get a chance to buy this because so many other people wanted it. But we got speaking to the couple. They were really nice. And I think they just took a liking to us. We sort of said that we're moving a bit more rurally and we really need something like this. And they sold it to us. So I'm delighted. We got a great deal and it's still in amazing condition. So Will is just chuffed. You can probably imagine him. This is like what he was made for. What is it with men and grass cutting? They absolutely love it. We have a whole house to do and we need to sort out the land. We need to sort out like where we're putting the garden and what we're doing with the animals and the fencing and everything else. And all Will can think about is scarifying this grass to sort of get rid of the moss and making a really nice lawn. I don't know. Maybe it's just ingrained in them. I'm like, this is the last job we need to be thinking about. This is 4 years down the line. But no, apparently it's priority. But I thought today we could just have a chat, a general chat, answer some questions surrounding all the topics, prepping and food storage and personal questions. I got quite a few of those as well. And I just think it would be a good opportunity to get to know one another and just chat about all the things that is easier to say here than it is on social media. Social media is just such a small snippet of information and it's so hard to get into things because everybody kind of feels intent on misunderstanding you sometimes. It's a hard place to try and share authentically and honestly. You're always going to offend someone. You're always going to upset someone. It's just a weird world that we're living in. And I take these breaks from Instagram in particular and my head feels so clear. Like I feel so much better when I'm not on Instagram, especially now that I have Rosemary as well. I don't have very much time. All you mothers out there will understand that, or fathers. I have a break and I'm kind of like in two minds about going back. And I've been like this for a while now. This isn't me saying that I'm going to cancel all social media and come off it, but I think it's becoming a really difficult place to be. It's not like what it was 10 years ago. Do you remember in 2012, Instagram was just such a happy place and you shared photos with like really heavily edited filters and it was just nice and easy and breezy and you had these few people that you would follow. Mine was definitely Yoga Girl. I followed her for like, I think it's like probably like 15 years whenever she created her account. And you kind of grow with these people that you see online and everything feels so much lighter back then. And now everything's heavy. People want to talk about politics. People want to shout at you. I swear I could share a recipe that had beans in it and someone would go, I'm so offended. What if I don't like beans? What sort of recipe should I make? And I'm like, I don't know. I don't know, man. It's so difficult. I'm trying to be this present mother. And I find myself, I do not want to be on my phone around Rosemary. I'm not getting on at anyone else. I'm not attacking anyone that does this. But I don't want to raise my baby with her thinking that a phone in her face is something normal. She sees my face and she sees a phone. Or every time that my phone notification goes off, I'm instantly distracted. I look away from her and I look towards my phone. And I sit and I just wonder, maybe I'm thinking into it too much, but I just wonder, what is that doing to her? Is that really going to affect her development when she sees this one of the most important people in her life? A little ping goes off and my attention's instantly taken away from her and I'm looking at something else. And something that doesn't even matter. The majority of the time that a notification goes off on our phone is it that important that it's distracting you from your baby? From your baby that's developing and growing, or your kid that runs in from school telling you about their day and all these experiences? Is it that important? Probably not. And this is where I'm struggling, because to create content, you need time to create content. I mean, I'm sitting here during a nap time just now, and it's fine. I can do that once a week. Usually, if I'm doing it between nap times, this podcast, it will take me maybe 2.5 nap times. And then to edit it as well, it probably takes me a good hour and a half on top of that. So a Sunday night typically is when I edit. Rosemary goes to bed at, say, 7:30, and I'll edit until, just say I start at 8, I'll probably edit until 10 o'clock and then put it out. So it takes time. I don't mind doing that. Like, I love this podcast. I love connecting with people on a deeper level and bringing preparedness to the world like this, because we can deep dive. This isn't short, like 30-second clips on Instagram. We can really deep dive. But it's just trying to get the balance, right? It's trying to get the balance, because I can't do all the things. And just this past week or two, I've kind of discovered I don't really want to do all the things. The first few months of Rosemary's life, I was still trying to continue on as I was pre-baby. So I'm doing all the things that I used to do before baby, but now I've got something a lot more important. And I'm still trying to find that balance. I'm not going to sit here and tell you that I know what I'm doing. I'm not trying to say I'm going to sell you this course or this ebook that tells you how to be a working mom and a present mother and a cleaner of the house and walker of the dogs and still have a relationship with your friends and family and a social life, but make a lot of time for your husband and still be intimate. And there is all the things, right? And I never understood. I can remember people used to talk about it beforehand, what it's like to be a mom, and I didn't understand until I became a mum. And then, you know, Will works away Monday to Friday, so I really am solo parenting. It's all consuming. And I experienced mom guilt for the first time. This is an expression I've heard over and over and over again, mom guilt. And I was like, I didn't get it. And then on Friday night, I've got Rosemary sitting in her swingy chair, and I'm desperately trying to cook this steak, and I've cleaned the house and I'm making dinner. It was delicious, may I add. It was a steak and caramelized onions and sweet potatoes and broccoli and a homemade peppercorn sauce. And I'm doing all of this, and she's just swinging in this chair. And to be honest, now that I look back at it, she is probably quite happy. I'm speaking to her. She's right beside me as I'm cooking. But I felt this overwhelming guilt that I wasn't playing with her. I wasn't holding her. I wasn't interacting enough. And that was only probably an hour of the day. I know she's fine. Babies don't need to be held all day, every day. I get that. But it's pressure. It's a lot of pressure. And I'm still figuring it out. So thank you for sticking with me through all of this. I've definitely not been as present on social media. And now that we're talking about all of this as well, it's a strange place to be, because I share a lot of our lives on social media, but I've got to keep the privacy. I know that Will doesn't like to be on social media very much, and we've kind of been having discussions about Rosemary. I think going forward, I don't want to share her either. There's a lot of strange people out there, and I would never disclose where we are in the world. I think now that I've gained more of an audience in this platform, there are some people on there that I'm sure don't have pure intentions. And I don't want to jeopardize our family's safety, and I don't want anyone to ever find out where we are or have more details about Rosemary or any future kids. And it's just weird. There's so much that I'm figuring out. I know that I'll get there, but until then, I just want to say thank you for being here. Truly, from the bottom of my heart, I know I usually end each podcast by thanking you, but if you're listening to this and I'm playing in your ears, no matter where you are in the world right now, really thank you, because you're supporting me and you're supporting my family just by listening to me ramble every week. I feel really blessed and grateful. Now, I thought maybe we could just get into some questions. Question of the week. Do any of you listen to the girls' bathroom? That's what they do. Anyway, I am not Sophia or Cinzia, so I will crack on. Hi, listeners. Are you ready to take your preparedness to the next level? My comprehensive online course is a great place to start. From food storage and preservation to water readiness and bug out bag checklists, I've got you covered. This is more than just presentation screens. I've also added downloadable worksheets, video tutorials, checklists, and loads of prepping content, which is consistently being added to as we generate new ideas. Not to mention, you get to take it in your own time to fit around your lifestyle, and you get lifetime access to the content. And here's the best part. As a valued listener of this show, you get an exclusive 10% discount with code POD10. That's POD10 to enter into the coupon code section at checkout. Don't miss out on this opportunity to level up your preparedness game. Visit the link in the show notes to enroll today, and together we can build a future where we are prepared for whatever life throws our way. I'll see you there. Okay. Adam asks, you mentioned about not wanting to use flea and tick treatment in your last episode unless necessary. Do you use tablets to worm them? Okay, great question. And no, I don't use worm tablets because I don't find it necessary to do it on a preventative level when it's really rare that they get worms. I mean, if you listen to this podcast every week, you probably get the gist by now that I just don't like using chemicals unless necessary. So what I do instead is I worm count them. And it does take a little bit more effort, but it's fine. We can do it. So usually about every 4 or 5 months, I collect their poo samples and send it away to this company. And then this company runs it through a lab, goes through it, and just makes sure that there's no worms present or no, I think, eggs present. I could be wrong in saying that. I'm not a professional. I'm not a scientist. Always do your own research. I feel the need to preface every podcast by saying that. Please do your own research and don't hold me liable for anything. Anyway, so that's what I do. And it came back once that they did have worms. Both Callie and Vigo have had worms, I think only once in their lives. And so what I did was the company that I work with, they recommended grapefruit seed extract. And you add that just a little bit into their food for 10 days and it just helps clear out any parasites. And then I worm counted them again after that and they were free of worms. It was that easy for us. Again, look into this yourself. And another thing that we do is just give them natural dewormers every now and again. They get like a furry rabbit's ear or anything like that to eat. And if there's anything in their digestive tract, it kind of clings on to the fur as it moves through them and they expel it through their poop, essentially. So yeah, not the most fun topic, but that's just what we do. Ashley asks, how should I store pasta long term? It's all my little one will eat. So I get that. So I want to make sure that it's stored. So really what I would do if you're going to store it long term is add it to a Mylar bag, add an oxygen absorber, one that's suitable for the amount that you're storing in the Mylar bag that you're storing. You can find conversion charts online. If you just type in oxygen absorber conversion chart or something similar, it will show you all the different foods and then the size of the amount that you're storing and in turn the size of oxygen absorbers that you need. And then after that, I would heat seal it shut, the Mylar bag. I would put it into a pest proof bucket and keep it somewhere cool and dark. And that'll be good for a long time. I mean, I'm not going to give you exact years. Some people say 20 years. I would definitely try and rotate that out every sort of 10 years just to make sure that it's not going to go bad, that you're still getting it while it's good. You're still consuming it. Nothing's going to waste. And you're keeping on top of your short-term, mid-term and long-term food storage. Now, Helen, I've mentioned Helen before on this podcast. It's a wild Helen. Her Instagram is amazing. You will learn a lot from her if you follow her. So I really recommend going and following her. She asked me so many questions to put on here. So I'm just going to pick out a few of them and then maybe I'll save some for a different point in the coming podcasts. Helen asked, what qualities do you look for in someone or something similar? You said, what values are important to me? I guess it depends on the context really, but now that I am thinking about it, I only really want to surround myself with people who are trustworthy, honest, and hardworking. Like, those three things are really important to me. I like genuine people who aren't interested in gossip or drama. Like, give me the fireside conversations over that stuff any day. And I think it's weird, like, maybe these past 3 years, both Will and I have gone through a big change with our friends and our friend group. We're kind of finding new connections and not being interested in going out in the party scene and being hungover or drinking. I still love a lot of my friends that do that. I'm just not interested in doing it. And when you step away from it, you realize that a lot of these people that you were connecting with, I say in air quotes, was only done so through going out and partying. So those sort of friendships are going to naturally crumble. But we have gained so many great friends since then, and just finding people that share the same interests as you. I've spoken about this before, the sort of people that you don't need to consistently explain yourself to is life-changing. When I started this Instagram, I don't know how I shared this story before, but I initially didn't want local people to find it, right? Because it's kind of hard for our safety and our privacy, and I'm a bit of a hermit. I don't like sharing a lot. I don't like local people knowing a lot about us, yada yada yada. Here's all the lists. But this girl found it that lived near me. She's a couple years older than me, and she just sort of said, like, I love your page. I am so into all of this. I've actually got a friend group that goes to church with me. I think you'd really like them. Do you want to come and meet us for coffee? And from there, I met this group of girls, like group of women, should I say, and being around these people made me realize what it can be like to have friends that get it. It was incredible. I always thought, like, maybe I had issues speaking. I am quite introverted in general, and I have a hard time making conversations when it's about mundane things that aren't interesting, right? And I always thought it was a me thing. But as soon as I sat down for coffee, and I was waiting in this coffee shop, and I knew one girl, but I didn't know the other three that were going to come in. I didn't even know what they looked like. And I can still remember that chat was one of the best conversations of my life. We were all so excited. We were talking about everything, like all the kind of crazy conspiracy theory things. And we were talking about birth and just, and this is before I was even pregnant. And it was life changing. It's so different and it's so important. And since having Rosemary, even, you kind of see the people that you want your kids to be brought up around, the people that treat her like their own. It's so beautiful. I'm watching my brother and his girlfriend, Shona, who's also one of my best friends, interact with Rosemary and treat them as their own. And that's actually Rosemary's godparents. So God forbid if anything ever happened to Will and I, they're there for her. And I just know in my heart that absolutely everything would be okay because she's got them. Oh, makes me a little bit emotional. Next up, we have Jonathan, and Jonathan asks, is there anything you do when you start to feel unwell? Any tinctures or anything special? 37 weeks pregnant, I got super ill, and I'm not a person that generally gets that ill. I don't know, was it because I was so close? I was so pregnant, so close to labor. I don't know what it was. I came down with this flu. I had a temperature, a banging sore head. I didn't know what was happening. I actually called Will home from work because I didn't know, was it my body going into labor? I was all over the place. And I spoke to my acupuncturist. His name is Kasim. He is amazing. He knows everything. He's got a tincture and a remedy for everything. And he said to me, Emily, focus on the vitamin C protocol. So that's basically just vitamin C every hour on the hour for a whole day. You're trying to ram that into you as much as possible. And that really, really helped. So since that, going forward, I haven't been unwell since then, touch wood. But that's really what we focus on. Resting, sleeping, elderberry tincture, if it's like a cold or a flu that I feel coming on. I've made some of that last year and I'll take some of that in some water. And then just sweating it out. I don't necessarily believe that illness is a bad thing. I like to view it as your sort of immune system leveling up. We as a society tend to view vomiting and diarrhea and sweating and everything else as something being really wrong and something to be avoided. But actually, it's your body just doing what it's designed to do by expelling these things. It's helping get whatever is there out. Fever isn't a bad thing. And I'm saying that now. I know the first time Rosemary gets a fever, I know that I'm going to freak out, but it's their body doing what it's designed to do. I always come back to trusting the power of the immune system, trusting that this is what our body is designed to do when we don't tamper with it, letting things run its course. And then you come out the other end with all these great antibodies. Another question I got from Helen that I really loved was, who is your biggest inspiration and why? And not to sound cliche, but I really think my dad is my biggest inspiration. He came from nothing. Like, they were poor growing up, and he worked so hard to build a fulfilling and rich life. And by rich, I don't even necessarily mean in money. Like, he created that. He did create wealth. But I also mean in hard work and in kindness and in humbleness and raising and having a good family and friends and appreciating nature and what the earth provides in abundance. And I just see my dad, and he never passes anyone in need of help. If someone's broken down at the side of the road, my dad is always going to stop. He'll be the first one there to help. Whether he knows how to or not, he's always going to offer a lending hand. And I love that. A little bit of a backstory about him. So, like I said, he grew up with nothing really. Obviously, he had a great family, but he started welding and fabrication. He started an apprenticeship when he was a young man. And from there, he just progressed. He took risks, he invested. And when I was really young, I can remember him starting this business. And it was in fabrication. He sort of erected steel buildings. Just growing up and seeing him getting up every single day and going to work, and the power of hard work and taking risks and believing that things are going to work out for the better. He used to always say, or my mum used to always say this as well, like, what's for you won't pass you by. And with that almost kind of came an understanding of, if something didn't happen, then it's not the path that you're meant to go down. You keep persisting, you keep going, and eventually you're going to get to where you want to be. It might not look like what you'd initially envisioned, but God or the universe or whatever you want to believe in has a different plan for you. There's so many times in my life that that's happened, that I've been so upset that something's not gone my way. And then you look back in a few years and you're like, thank goodness that didn't happen. I'm thinking about a house right now. In particular, Will and I were like determined we wanted it. It was in the village. It was only a few doors down, like kind of from where we already stayed. And we were gutted. We were absolutely gutted when we never got it. It had a bit of a bigger garden. It would have given us more opportunity to grow food. And we were so upset that we never got it. And now sitting here with 8 acres and obviously a house that needs a lot of renovation. And I don't say this in a braggy way, like this house still needs a lot of work. But I just think, thank goodness we didn't get that. Thank goodness there was another plan for us. But yeah, I just think obviously a lot of lessons came from my dad. He's the reason that I'm a morning person. We grew up kind of not being allowed to lie in. I'm thankful for that now. But I can remember any time the sun would start coming up, he'd be like, Emily, come on, the sun's cracking the rocks. The early bird gets the worm. And yeah, that's why we now all get up early. We have major productive issues and we can't have a lie in, or we can't do canna. I can always remember that one. I know that's not proper English, but it was his English. And anytime we came up against a problem, I'd be like, oh, I can't do this, or I don't know how to do this. He'd go, you can't do canna. And it basically just means that, like, if someone else can do it, so can you. There's always a way to do it. It's always figure outable. And looking back on it, it did instill this like confidence and determination in us, because maybe it's like this false sense of confidence. But even when it came to passing my driving test, I was terrified. I was young and 17 and insecure and I didn't know what I was doing. But I was also like, well, if so-and-so can do it, then obviously I can do it. And I've just kind of been like that throughout the rest of life. Okay, next question. Jerome is not a name I hear very often. Hi, Jerome. He asks, what is this three-layer system you speak of? So I take it, it's just from me talking about it on social media. The three-layer system that I usually refer to is to do with food storage. So it's to make sure that you have different layers as a backup. You don't just have the stuff in your fridge, for example. You've got stuff in your pantry too. You've got stuff in your freezer. You've got stuff in your long-term food storage. So for me, when I talk about it, I usually mean a short-term layer, which is the likes of what's in your fridge, things that you're using every day that can also be called your working pantry or your kitchen pantry, the things that you're always using. Think butter, salt, the oats in your cupboard, the rice in your cupboard, everything that stays in like little packets or you've got in small glass jars, the things that you're using a lot. Then I go on to my mid layer or my medium term storage, and that's usually what is used to replenish my short term layer. So let's think about rice. My three layer system for rice looks like my short term working pantry. It's in this small little tub, usually in a glass jar or a big plastic box that's kind of like airtight. I'm using that all the time. I'm cooking with that. To refill that, I go into my midterm layer, which is a bucket in my pantry that's got like a gamma seal lid and a little scoop in there that I can use to refill my short-term layer. And then we go into my long-term layer, and that is the stuff that's usually bagged in bulk in Mylar bags. It's put in a cold, dark place in like buckets or totes or something that's pest-proof. And you're usually storing that to rotate through on a long-term basis. So we have that in bulk, like I just said. And we're going to rotate through it every sort of 5 to 10 years. This is not stuff that you're going into all the time. But when you do open that, you are using it to refill your mid-term layer, which is then going to refill your short-term layer. Again, this is difficult to explain over a podcast. I just really wish I was sitting with people. My course goes into this a lot more. There's a shameless plug, but I'll leave that in the show notes below if you want to learn more about food storage and water storage and just all things beginner preparedness in general. Okay, Sandra asks, what do you think of registering your chickens? I didn't want to rant during this podcast. I said to myself that I've got to reel it in. I'm getting angry on the podcast all the time and I'm not going to do it. But this makes me angry. I don't want to register our chickens. So in case you don't know what I'm referring to, recently the UK has brought about this law that anybody keeping any backyard chickens or birds needs to register them. You need to every year fill in what you have, how many you keep, yada, 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 send it off to, is it the government or DEFRA? I don't even know. It's all the same thing at the end of the day. And I'm not happy. Before this, it used to be if you kept over 50 chickens, and now it's any chickens. If you have 2 chickens, you have to register them. It's a joke. I don't like it. They say it's to protect the people. It's for the greater good. Where have we heard that before? I thought we'd all learn from this. And yes, avian flu has been coming and going like it has since the beginning of time. But what they're trying to say is they're not happy because they can't monitor it with the amount of people that keep backyard chickens. I think it's just giving the government an excuse to come in and cull your chickens as they see fit. Mark my words, if there's an outbreak of avian flu, they're going to want to kill your chickens to protect everybody else. No, 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 no. Especially now that they're trying to say it's passing from animals to people. Have you seen all of this? There's like cases in America. Hang on, let me find it. Okay. After a quick Google, I know, not the most reputable source, but hey ho, The Guardian says American cows now have bird flu too, but it's time for planning, not panic. Wow, that's surprising. Normally they jump straight to panic. There's a guy in Texas, H5N1 bird flu. He was apparently diagnosed with bird flu. The New York Times, bird flu is infecting more mammals, but what does that mean for us? What does it mean? Let's have a further look into things. What does it mean? What are the measures that we're going to take, bar registering them and taking more of our freedoms away? So I just typed in, does the government have power to cull your chickens? And of course they do. I just want to make sure that I'm not spreading misinformation on this podcast. I know that I fact check myself all the time. I just want to know that what I'm saying is true. In some sense, a lot of this obviously is my own opinions. Listening to me most weeks, you can gauge what my own opinions are going to be like by this point, I'm sure. It all comes down to leave me alone. Let me do what I want. The government has too much control. They are slowly taking it from us, left, right, and center. You give them an inch, they take a mile. And it's going to keep going and keep going little by little until there's nothing left. This is what they do. it turns into this huge machine of control, and they do it little by little without you noticing. There's a quote on that. What is that quote? By Pat Miller. Here it is, by Pat Miller. The best way to take control over a people and control them utterly is to take a little bit of their freedom at a time, to erode rights by 1,000 tiny and almost imperceptible reductions. In this way, the people will not see those rights and freedoms being removed until past the point at which these changes cannot be reversed. And I see this happening left, right and centre. I really do. Not just with this whole register in your chickens. They've now banned wood stoves in Scotland. I knew that was going to happen. For new builds and for renovations, they are trying to change it for the Highlands and Islands because we need our wood stoves. We have severe weather, we live really rurally, and we have power outages, and it's the main source of heating that a lot of people rely on. What else have we had recently? In Scotland, there's this hate speech bill act that's come in that means that you can get jailed for saying something that offends someone. I'm not even going to go into that just now because it makes me really, really angry. It's like we're living in 1984, George Orwell, Big Brother is watching over you 24/7, and this is the way it's going, in my opinion. But anyway, back to the chickens and the culling chickens. One, you can get a £5,000 fine if you don't register your chickens. But two, let's have a look. So the government has power to cull animals to control the spread of some animal diseases. Generally receive compensation for any healthy animals culled. Oh, that's really nice, isn't it? I have nothing else more to say. I just don't like it. I think backyard chickens, you would know pretty instantly if your bird had bird flu. They present really awfully. It's not nice. I've seen birds with bird flu. When you are keeping your animals clean and sanitary and they're free range, they're in great conditions, it is not like these factory farmed birds that are all rammed into terrible, horrible situations and conditions. They never see the light of day. They're living on top of one another. They're plucking their own feathers out. They're pumped full of antibiotics to keep them going and make them grow. The everyday person keeping a few chickens to have a few eggs and be a little bit more self-sufficient should not come under this bracket. This is a hill that I will die on. And right now it starts with us sending in all of this paperwork. We're letting them know exactly what we have, exactly what they need to come and cull. And it's the slippery slope argument, the slope that I always come back to. At what point do they start charging you for doing this, for keeping your own chickens? Because you're now a danger to your neighbours, because it's increasing the risk of disease and rats and everything else. And here we go. It just never ends. It never ends. At what point do your neighbours start reporting you because you have smoke coming out of your chimney and you're now polluting the air that we all breathe? You might think I'm crazy now, but it's not that far off. You start to brainwash a few people and it's just this knock-on effect. And there we go. I said I wouldn't rant, but I've ranted. And now I'm done. And Rosemary is about to wake up. Do you know she slept for almost 40 minutes now? That's great. Sorry I couldn't get through more questions. This is what happens. I take one question and I just run with it. If you enjoyed this episode, let me know and we'll do more of these because I love speaking on certain topics. I struggle to do so without feeling like I'm forcing my opinions down everyone's throat, but I think when people ask for it, it's easier to do so. Once again, if you have any questions, send them into preppingforeverything@gmail.com or message me on Instagram at preppingforeverything. I hope you all have a great week and I look forward to speaking to you again next Wednesday. Bye!